Eye on Careers.
In association with laymoon.com, jobs, courses, and all things career.
Hello and welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And today we have a very special guest, someone who is at the helm of one of the most iconic comic book brands in the world, Archie Comic Books. It's Nancy Silberkleit, the co-CEO of Archie Comics and a global businesswoman. Nancy, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Zam, wham, wow, Shane, and to the Middle East, to everyone out there listening today.
Well, it's really exciting to have you here because obviously Archie Comics is a brand we've all grown up with. I just associate it with your childhood whenever you see it. So it has a place in everyone's heart, I think, when we see that brand.
Well, that's how I sign my letters, with a heart, a real heart. I heart Archie. But it's, interesting when you talk about the global brand recognition. When I came into Archie Comics 5 years ago, I really did not personally have a connection. I did not grow up with comic books. So after the passing of my husband, when I stepped in to take his place, I had to really update myself on the brand I was looking over, and I fell in love with those characters. So once I fell in love with those characters, I, had also seen that my background was a teacher, and that my love for educating and getting children to read and learn, I was able to pair that. So I say today, I'm one of Riverdale High's teachers with Mr. Weatherby as my principal. But what I'd like to add is that, when you talk about the global recognition, I did not realize how the words of our fans, I read Archie, I read Archie. I did not realize what an impact that would make. It made an impact that it changed my life forever. So now here I am in Dubai. I'm here to talk about my foundation, Rise Above, where I put out comic books that deal with today's relevant issues. I brought one into the studio here that deals with bullying, what one can do when bullied. The message in there is never let anyone define who they want you to be. You know who you are, and you got to get out of their box. Get active in your life. And then the other one I brought into the studio here is on obesity. And then we have one on healthy eating. But before the show, we started talking about how I would love to reach out to someone in your audience to see if they have an interest, as I do, on diabetes. Type 2 diabetes, I think, is a global issue, and I think it's very important that we get out a book on this now, but a book in the format of graphics, because graphics is what will give the message in a personal way. Once somebody starts reading the small text and they look at the graphics, they expand on the story, where they internalize the message in a very personal way. So you have a better chance of someone acting on the good information you're giving one.
Well, so quite a bit there. For those who aren't familiar with Archie Comics, it's a comic book about high school students, and the high school is Riverdale High. So Nancy's referring to actually her hypothetically working at the school. That's the attachment level that you feel. I always find it exciting, though, when you see a CEO or someone who's at the helm of a global organization, and this is truly a global brand. We don't envision any of their failures or some of the times where they had setbacks or fell down and scraped their knee. And it wasn't always rainbows and flowers for you. I mean, you had a tough go starting out even in school, I believe. There was a few setbacks early on. Can you maybe talk a little bit about what those were and how you faced them?
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely, because now my life is, you know, just bubbling, and it's a shame that I hid the fact that I had been retained in first grade. It was something that, you know, really anchored me, and sadly, my husband died 5 years ago and never knew that I had been retained in first grade. But what happened, when I say I had never read a comic book, I had no love of reading. I could read, but reading for enjoyment, entertainment, was not my thing. So once I started picking up these comic books, I was reading them over again. I started piling up a stack. I had my favorites. I couldn't wait for the next ones to come out. My favorite character is Mr. Lodge. And I said, because he's a businessman, and I just heart, you know, the core of profit and nonprofit business today. So once I started getting into the comics, I started finding myself going to bookstores and buying books that my friends were reading, and now I could engage in conversation. So, you know, that not only not having any business experience was very tough for me, but not knowing the brand, but I have fallen in love with the Archie brand, and, you know, you said it takes place in a school, but very important. The orange hair, freckled face main character, Archie Andrews, who has two very different girls always on, you know, each side, you know, as, you know, friends, and, you know, always the stories can evolve around them. There is a core of great friendships. They have many friends, and the diversity is growing as, you know, I have come in with my new partner. We have, you know, reached out to, we have a global comic book going around. We have Archie is touring different countries, and we're bringing in that culture. But when you bring in the friends always seem to be in conflict. But Archie Comics always guarantees to leave you with a chuckle or a smile on your face, because Archie and the gang know how to work out those conflicts.
So we won't find any Shakespearean endings in your comic book. But it's interesting that you said that, you know, for those listening, retained, you know, it means that basically you failed grade one, or they set you back in grade one, and you never told your husband that. Interesting. So I guess there was some feelings of shame there, that there's basically, I think early on, they separate the kids. They say, here's the smart kids, here's the not so smart kids. And that stigma sticks with you. And I think so many people out there, they just don't go to university, not because they're not smart enough, but because they were told they weren't smart enough.
Absolutely. And I can remember, you know, my dear grandmother, you know, saying some disparaging things about my intelligence. And here, you know, I graduated from Boston College in 1976. You know, look at me today. I'm on my way to India from here to be a TEDx speaker. And I've had so many accomplishments that, you know, I never celebrated. So I go around the world and I speak to our young people that, you know, do not wait for anyone to, you know, celebrate your achievements. Always celebrate yourself. Rely on yourself, because it's, you know, you're the only one that, you know, gets to make things happen.
And so you're not a traditional business person, because for a large part of your life, you were a music teacher, is that
art
right?
Teacher.
Art teacher. And can you maybe talk about that progression and the metamorphosis that you go through as you take over your late husband's position in the business?
Well, my background is very important to me. You know, I first started speaking about how I stepped out of the classroom and into the boardroom, but I always speak about how I will not take off my teaching hat, because I feel my background has helped me be very successful with, you know, some of the failures and roadblocks I have come across, because a teacher has to have patience, and you have to know how to maneuver around these roadblocks to get things done. So my teaching background has been enormously, you know, helpful in working out contracts and negotiating and just dealing with different types of personalities.
So then you move into the CEO position. Was that challenging? Like, did you ever have any moments where you doubted yourself? Or I mean, because I think even in the time I see you, I think I see a more confident Nancy now, a more ambitious Nancy, a more grounded Nancy, as you kind of go through this transition.
I like that title, Nancy Now, because that's so true. When I came into Archie Comics in 2009, I had signed a five-year contract March 2009. So it is it has expired now. So Nancy Now is, you know, moving on to other things. But there was one actual visual picture that your audience can't see, but Fortune magazine came in to photograph me on my new entrance into Archie. You know, here you have someone, the, you know, taking a co-CEO position of a iconic brand that everyone knows globally. So Fortune magazine was very interested in that, and I've been in Fortune twice, and I believe when I'm over in India they're going to be interviewing me again, because I've turned out to be an interesting character. So that first picture of me, I show up wearing a gray sweater from a resale shop. We have these resale shops where people, you know, get rid of their clothes and then you can rebuy them. And I think it even had holes in it. I had my hair in a ponytail. So I was holding on to Betty. We had a cutout of one of our characters. And I said I was holding on to Betty for dear life because I wasn't so sure of what I had signed up for. But as my path continued along Archie, I started wearing, as you can see today, and your audience can, I always have some orange on to emulate the trademark of Archie's orange hair, Archie Orange. You open up my closet, it looks like it's popping out of a comic book. The colors are just so vibrant. Orange dress, orange pants, orange sweaters, orange shoes, orange pocketbooks. I just love it. So now when I get photographed, you know, I have the Archie Orange on and I'm not holding anybody. Because, you know, I have a vision. I had no vision before, but now I certainly do.
This is the story of Nancy Silberkleit, the co-CEO of Archie Comic Books, one of the most iconic comic book brands in the world. We'll be coming up with a few more tips on roads learned on her road to the top. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to the story of one of the most iconic comic book brands in the world. We are here with co-CEO of Archie Comic Books, Nancy Silberkleit. Nancy, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Zam wham well again, Shane. Glad to be here.
It's always exciting, and you know, we were just talking, for those just joining us, of, you know, early on how you did find some challenges in school. You had some challenges with your self-concept, and then as you matured, you refused to let other people's opinions really define who you are, and you really come into your own. And I think now at this stage in your life, you're really starting to enjoy who you are and who you're becoming. And I think you now said, I have a vision now, whereas you didn't when you first joined the company. Can you maybe talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Well, the first vision that came to me once I came into Archie Comics is how the comic books are like a bowl full of candy. I was observing how children were picking up these comics and reading them. They would be walking down a hallway with their nose buried deep in the pages. So once I saw that, I started, you know, comparing to my reading experience when I had been retained. I remember the books they gave me. I twisted them, I folded them, and shoved them into a little handbag I carried daily to hide my shame. The books didn't interest me, and it was like a punishment. So I grew up to be an art teacher. Could you imagine if someone had handed me a comic book? So I was very interested in sparking the love of reading by introducing comic books to school. So I started, you know, comic book fair. But soon as I started comic book fair, another idea came to me about talking about relevant issues in comic book format. Because once you give a little bit of text and these rich graphics, there is an area I'd identify as the gray area. It is the gray area where the reader gets to expand the story, and when that happens, it becomes more personal and you are more likely to act on the information being given to you. So I happen to be passionate about our overuse of plastic. I want us to reduce our use of plastic, rethink and reduce and reuse plastic. So I did this wonderful story. I brought the digest. It's called Bottle Battle. And when you see, you know, Archie sitting on a pile of plastic, you know, you start thinking. I started reducing my use of plastic. My daughter, she says, Mom, are we never going to buy plastic bags again? I said, I guess we are not. We're just going to use what comes our way. And we have been dealing with this for about 5 years, and we're just fine.
I was thinking about this the other day. Like, I'm just one person, and I must put about, create, I think, like 3 liters of garbage a day, you know, like, because every day, at the end of every day, I have a bag of garbage that comes out of my apartment. And I'm thinking, how can one person, if I'm just one person, I'm making that much garbage. Where is this all going, right? It is a bit of a major issue.
And we have to be socially responsible. We have to have responsibility. And I think the finger pointing now is to individuals. We have all these wonderful programs in that, you know, governments are, you know, regulating this and that, but it is the individual. And I have stopped buying bottled water. I have a filter I use, and I have been doing a great job. My water tastes great, and I'm very pleased I'm doing that. I think it was kind of a false security of me having to go out and buy bottled water.
I'm guilty as charged, but I think, as Voltaire said, no snowflake in an avalanche ever feels responsible. And I think that's the problem, and I'm guilty as charged as well, unfortunately. I was just with Sanjeev Mehta, who is the CEO of Unilever Hindustan and one of the iconic CEOs of our region. And he was doing a presentation, and he said, you know, if we keep, he said, in 2030, 2/3 of the world's middle class will be in Asia. That's India and China and everything like that. And he said, if they start to meet the consumption rates of the United States of America at that point, he said, we will need two planets. We will have consumed the resources of two planets to meet this. So he said, we are fast approaching a watershed. You know, this is not looking good. So, you know, I think your vision of what needs to happen is very real.
Right. And when you say not looking good, you are absolutely right. This is a very serious problem. We're having serious problems with water and also with pollution. So I did another story because I believe in sustainability, because if I'm just going to do one story, nothing's going to happen. So I want to keep putting it out there to our young people, because I believe our young people are the movers and shakers. They can get their parents, their caregivers, to do the right thing. I know children are very influential. So I happen to hear that Rwanda, as a country, refuses plastic bags. You cannot use plastic bags in Rwanda. So I happened to be invited over there, and I did see people carrying around sacks and paper bags. There was no plastic. So I was very pleased that we had one of our writers, one of our talented writers, we have many of them, but Batten Lash did this story called Drastic with Plastic. A ambassador from Rwanda comes to Riverdale High and starts to talk about, you know, why they had to do this. So I think just putting out the message again and again will help individuals to start rethinking what they're going to do for our planet.
But I don't think you're a lone wolf on this at all, because the subtext of what I'm hearing is the development of the empathetic organization or the socially responsible organization. And I think now in the United States and Canada, you have a new legal entity that's being formed that's called the B Corporation. That is a mix between a corporation and an NGO, where the mandate is dual, and one within the covenants of the corporation, it says, you know, we are going to create value for the community, and we will also create value for the stakeholders. And a lot of people saying is one of the big changes that we'll see in the business world in the 21st century, or one of the big contributions that the millennials will make, the millennial generation, is that this will be the most empathetic generation to come, because they've grown up with the internet, they've grown up with understanding what's Rwanda and what's the, you know, what's mm-hmm. happening. So it's an exciting time. And now I think there's 1,000 B corporations registered only in North America.
I agree. And the culture of business today is recognizing your targeted market. And and letting your customers, your clients, your fans know that you care about them. And the way you show them that you care is being socially responsible. You know, I like being a good corporate citizen, and I am not the only one. I know we just did a deal that was by MAC Cosmetics. They had an Archie line here in Dubai. They had it in the United States. It was all over.
MAC makeup Archie line.
Yes.
Okay.
But MAC Cosmetics is a very sociable, social, responsible, you know, company. That was just one off the top of my head. But that's the culture today of business. They realize the people out there want to know a lot more about them, and they like to hear that the companies are doing good things and being responsible.
Yeah, it really begs the question, you know, where you have, for example, you know, do you as a business or as a nation have the responsibility only to do business with ethical business operators? Are you, in fact, if you are purchasing from an unethical business operator, i.e. someone who's not following environmental regulation, who's not following child labor laws, who's not following health and safety practices, who's not giving their employees health insurance, who's not doing X, Y, Z, are you also an accomplice to the crime?
Well, I would say you are, because, you know, I was a Girl Scout leader at one time, and we learned that chocolate is not so sweet because, again, of, you know, using very young children to collect cacao beans and, you know, so many other things we learn. So, you know, you do feel responsible. So we started buying fair trade chocolate, and we decided not to go with those companies that were using child labor.
So you really see now the magazine or the comic book or the brand itself, because it exists, I think, in different shapes and forms, as a means for making us an impact in the community, making a social impact within the neighborhoods that it is consumed.
Yeah, I say to audiences to, you know, embrace and harness the visual image and comic books as an academic tool for communicating in today's world. And this is the greatest platform to put in relevant issues, because you're not, you know, jamming it down somebody's, you know, mind saying this is the way to go. You're giving them an opportunity to expand the story, because when you're, you know, your audience can't look at the graphics, but when you see the graphics in this book with the overuse of plastic, you start to think about it and you put yourself right in that comic panel and start thinking, what can I do? What can I do?
This is the story of Nancy Silberkleit, co-CEO of Archie Comic Books. Coming up, she'll be looking at what it takes to be successful in the new, in the 21st century. So stay with us. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to the story of one of the most iconic comic book brands in the world, Archie Comics, a brand we've almost all grown up with, especially if you're from Canada like I am, you would have definitely grown up with this brand. And we are with the co-CEO, Nancy Silberkleit. Nancy, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane. And, you know, reading Archie Comics for 20 minutes is a good thing. I call it Archie therapy. It's always the right time for Archie, because you're getting lost in fantasy. And when you can have some downtime and recharge your batteries, it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think reading is one of those things that you just can't get enough of. Now, you are one of the few women CEOs, I'm sure, not just in your segment, but across the board. I mean, how many of your peers in the other publishing houses or comic book houses are female?
I think there's one. I have been looking and searching for that, and you very correct. There's not many. The comic book industry is very male-dominated, naturally. But besides from that, I go to many business meetings, and when I walk into the room, I am sitting there, and I'm looking, and I am counting the number of female that are present. It's very few. So it's troublesome to me that I see very few women in these leadership positions of, a CEO. And when you look at boards, it's mostly men. So I do a lot of public speaking, and my biggest target is women and young girls. And I encourage the young girls to start thinking today about sitting on boards. I just want it to be another thing that a woman does, that they think about. They do want those board positions. There is a group called 2020 where they're looking to, their mission is to increase women on boards in 2020 by 20%.
2020 by 20. That's, I had an interesting experience when the Swedish Women's Business Council invited me to be a speaker, and you never really feel the gender difference, but then I was the only man in the room of about 30 of these Swedish women, and they're all business women, and they're, you know, they have the, you know, what they say about Swedish women is pretty much correct. You know, they're all tall, blonde, and they weren't hard on the eyes, let's just say. But you definitely all of a sudden feel that you feel the difference, right? And actually, it was a really interesting experience. And you don't realize. And then I started talking, and I was like, you know, early on, you may, you know, a young person may have a vision for themselves. They want to be a policeman. A policewoman. And, you know, if you ask a businessman, I mean, a business person. And then all of a sudden, you start to realize our language is so sexist. Right from the get-go, you know, the language around business, the language that you use, you know, does that have to change? Like, it almost seems like we have to change. It's so ingrained into our infrastructure.
Well, that has been the trend to kind of neutralize everything. But since I have stepped into business only 5 years ago, you know, my radar is way up. So I just simply say that women should start talking about that they are a woman, and they are a woman on a seat, on a board, because women, I feel, they approach things differently, and they should be proud of that and not looking to be equal. So I highlight that women, you know, go for those positions and don't hold back. I told you before the show, I ran for mayor in my town of Rye, New York. I had no political training background, but I had a desire. Our mayor wasn't running. I did not know of any female mayors that have had, you know, been in our community, and I did find there was one years ago. And then as a whole in the country, you know, there's very few. So I just thought, with my insight of how women are minimized in business, the boardroom, and politics, that it was my duty to run, and I will do it again. I lost badly, but it didn't matter. It was a fantastic experience.
And the total cost for running, like you only spent $200 entirely on the campaign?
$200, because I was going to walk down to Washington and show them that you do not need to spend all this money. I also ran as an independent because I wanted to show them that we do not have to put politics and take sides. We want to work as a whole. But I'm changing my thought on that. It really is important to spend money and get your name out there in the mailbox, on the papers and on the posters. Pay for all of those you know, opportunities to be on radio stations. So it does make a difference.
But even when even as you're saying now, I think, and I agree with you that, you know, a big part of it, 90% of it, is just the belief that you say, okay, I'm going to climb that mountain, or I want to climb that mountain. That's almost half the battle, or more than half the battle. But when we look at what you're mentioning, so to go on the board, and the top position on the board is chairman. Do we need to change that to chairperson? Do we need to change our language? Do we need to change the way we're all thinking about it? Why is it a chairman? And I always feel uncomfortable in the few instances where you do have a chairwoman, and you're in an event or you're public speaking, you're bringing this person up on stage, and you know, you say chairman, Nancy, it sounds weird, right?
Well, I think they usually use chairwoman. So I just, you know, I think I would just keep it as that, because I like to highlight the women in these positions. So it can still be chairmen and chairwomen.
So you keep it like that. Okay. Yes. That's quite interesting. Is there a difference for, you know, women in the workplace? Do they really work differently? Because I've worked with so many women. In fact, you know, I've been lucky that most of my bosses were female, which is fine. And I don't notice any difference. Like, I don't think there's a big difference if your boss is a man or a female, but you know, apparently there's studies and they say that there is a difference, and you actually had highlighted that a little bit.
Well, I believe our young men that are, you know, going through universities and business school have been raised differently. The matriarch of the family is the mother, and she teaches her sons to be fair and respectful. So that old white syndrome of men is kind of diminishing. And I see a lot of hope for the future of men, you know, being equal and you know, collaborating, you know, equally with another colleague, no matter if she's a male or female. But this may not sound politically correct. I do tell women to find some other woman in your organization that you can share emails with. Or if you were in a meeting and you think you said something that was important, you know, collaborate with her, put it in the email. Because I have had myself been in a situation where my ideas were totally diminished, and then 7 months, a year, 2 years later, they emerged, and nobody remembered it came from me. So it's very important to put it in email, and I'm sure this happens with both genders, but I do tell women, find someone that you can share information with and collaborate with, and I tell them, group once a month. Definitely once a month, go over your ideas, share it in email so it's documented.
It's interesting from my experience in the region when I talk to women who have gotten into leadership roles, they actually tell me, and this is through a third party, so I don't have any direct experience with this, but what they told me to my amazement is they said, you know, Shane, the ones that really hold us back the most, that really try to kneecap the most, are other women. And I thought that's totally fascinating. But, you know, I think every region has its nuances.
Well, women, have always been historically in budget. They put a lot of, they're not risk takers. Men seem to be risk takers. So I can see what you're saying, that women may try to tighten something up and not feel free to go explore, you know, that new business idea. So they, you know, like to stay in budget, and they're just not risk takers like men are.
So you're running a huge business now, launching new brands, new projects. What have been some of the big takeaways from a business perspective, from a tactics or strategy, or any lessons learned, or were there any epiphanies as you dove into the deep end, which you literally did?
Well, you know, I was, you know, the new kid on the block, and, you know, I was a little shy. But when I look back, I wish I had voiced my ideas in email and elaborated on them a bit more. So I say to your audience, if you have an idea, go for it. It is your idea, and don't let anybody take it away or diminish that idea. So, you know, that's my takeaway. You see something that looks promising and you have an idea, put it out there, and put it out big, and always put it in email, because you can come back to it in email, not in conversation, but you can do it in email.
This is the story of Nancy Silberkleit, the co-CEO of Archie Comic Books. We'll be right back with her insights on what it takes to be successful in the boardroom. So stay with us. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to one of the most iconic comic book brand stories of all time, Archie Comic Books, a brand that if you grew up in the United States or in Canada, you definitely grew up with, and so many other countries as well, that this is a household comic book brand. And we have the luxury of being with the co-CEO of Archie Comic Books, Mrs. Nancy Silberkleit. Nancy, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane. And we have been published in many different languages. We've been in German and Spanish and French-Canadian. We're going to be on e-books in China, I believe, starting this summer.
Wow.
I introduced the company to a person up in Boston, Massachusetts, who is taking our material and putting it into ebooks, but putting it into the language of that country, and one of them is China. So you asked me something, Shane. What does it take to be successful? I look at Veronica Lodge. You know, I talked about that picture I took with Fortune magazine, and I was holding Betty Cooper.
So for those who don't know, Archie, Veronica is one of the key characters in the Archie comic books, which is a story about high school students and their coming of age within that context.
So. And Veronica, she is known as the heiress, and she's kind of, sold short because she's always thinking about material things. But if you think about Veronica, she has the CIA in her. That is the secret to success, Shane. And I have put down the Betty image, and I have that Veronica Lodge's CIA going for me. Confidence, intelligence, and allure written across my heart. So with those three, you know, you can maneuver in a company quite successfully. Believe in yourself and, you know, do your homework and have some character about you. You know, my business cards, you remember my business cards? They're scratch and sniff.
I love that. Yeah. That's so cool.
Right. I want people to know who I am. Business card
know
should have
my
a color.
Smell.
It should have a color, a scent, and a slogan. I'm very big with slogans. So, you know, think of a slogan that people will associate you with. So, again, have Veronica Lodge's CIA, confidence, intelligence, and allure written across your heart.
And, you know, I think it's quite interesting, the scratch and sniff business card is obviously very, very cool. And your memory is so dependent. You know, sometimes if you just catch a smell, it can take you back 20 years in an instant, and it's like you were there. So I think it's a brilliant idea. But the other thing is, starting with your success formula, is confidence. I mean, so many times you can be under a negative manager, or you can be in a toxic work environment, or you can be fresh out of school and had, bad professors or bad teachers, or, you know, you just got marginalized for whatever reason. You weren't part of that group. You weren't part of the smart group, or you weren't part of whatever. And it destroys your self-confidence, you know. They threw Einstein out of school. So at a certain point, he's like, well, I must not be good at that. Later, you know, they make him one of the most acclaimed professors of all time. So how do you build up that confidence? And I agree with you 100% as an executive search professional. When I see someone who's struggling with their career, confidence becomes a big part of it. And the crisis wiped out a lot of confidence on many levels. How do you build that back up?
Well, what I say to people, it's always balance too, because, you know, if you're having a very difficult time, you know, of course, it's only natural to, you know, let that take up space in your brain. But there has to be balance, because most people, you will let it, overcome you, where it anchors you. So many times, I myself could not let it anchor me. I had to stay focused on my projects and move forward and let the negative not hold me back. But this didn't happen until just recently, because I was letting all that negative hold me back. You know, I was shameful for being retained. And that it hindered my participation in many things, because I had no confidence in myself. Now I have the biggest confidence, where, you know, I'm here today in Dubai. I will be in India tomorrow. Then I'm coming back to Dubai, and then I'm going on to Jordan. So I have a lot of confidence.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was listening to Les Brown, and he says, he what didn't do very good in school, in fact, and he was labeled as being mentally challenged, and he was then went on to being homeless, and despite all that, he said, I'm going to be independently wealthy, and people laughed at him, and then they said, Wes, you don't have a university education, you can't do that, and he was thinking, I can't do that, and he said, you have a resentment that this person convinced you not to chase your dream, or this person dissuaded you. And he said, who's the only person that convinced you? Is you convinced yourself. The inner voice inside you woke up and said, Les, you can't do that. And he said, the first thing that I need to do when I wake up in the morning is do my first sales job, and that's on myself, is make sure that I sell and convince myself that I have what it takes to go where I want to go. And then he wrote up on the wall, and he said, no matter how hard it gets, no matter how tough it is, I'm going to make it. And of course, today he's a self-made multimillionaire who lives in Florida, and he's enjoying the good life. So, yeah.
Well, being challenged, I embrace that. I love being challenged. So it's the fuel that sparks me.
And then the next one, intelligence. I always feel like once people graduate from school, like they just stop learning, or like I don't know what it is, but when I talk to professionals, I use an I as well in my formula, but I call it intellectual curiosity. Like, are you reading about how to run a publishing house? Are you reading about how to be a better headhunter or executive search consultant or accountant? Or what are you doing training-wise, learning-wise? And Sanjeev Mehta, who was the CEO of Unilever Hindustan, he's running a huge multi-billion-dollar business. And he says, your only competitive advantage in the 21st century, where the only constant is change, is to always be learning. And so the education piece, the intellect is so important.
Well, that's, my slogan. Never let anyone define who they want you to be. You know who you are, but you got to get active in your life. Once you can have that freedom of getting active in your life, there are so many things out there that you don't even know they're there yet. And I call it the Harvard way. Harvard University tries to find out what you run from. So I tell people, experience things that you think you can't do, because they will lead you on paths that you don't even know that are there yet. Like, look at me. I ran for mayor, and I love it, and I can't wait to do it again.
Were you like, once Arnold Schwarzenegger made it, you're like, all right, that's it, I'm running as well. if we have a governor, I'm sure you would qualify, but...
Absolutely. I started thinking, Arnold was talking about president, Schwarzenegger and Silberkleid. I like the way it sounds. And that's something I learned when I was running for mayor. A lot of it had to be with, you look like a nice person. You have nice shoes. They had no idea about my political beliefs. So it could just be the name or the looks. I was very disappointed, because that was a good part of how people base how they're going to vote. Sad.
And then the final piece, allure. What does, that's French, isn't it? So you put a French piece into it. Does that also symbolize the global importance of globalization?
That was the scratch and sniff. It's style, intrigue, creativity. Allure. You have to always be changing. My Archie Orange. When I saw that picture in Fortune magazine with my ponytail and gray resale sweater, what was I thinking? That was Fortune magazine. The new one shows me in my Archie Orange dress, and with a style. So that's the allure, always changing it and, coming up with slogans and tapping into other senses so people know who you are. And that's, again, going back to, businesses today, they want the people to know who they are, and they know what people care about. People care about doing the right thing, environmentally, politically. So people have a lot of interest.
What's your final bit of advice for anybody who wants to run a comic book business, or run for mayor, or break out of their mold and get to that next level in their life, get to that next stage, grasp that next rung in the ladder, summit that next mountain, what would your advice to them be?
Well, I wish I had some better words than this, but do it. If you have the slightest desire, just do it, because you will be amazed where roadblocks will come down and you will go on another path that you didn't know that was there for you. It's amazing. I belong to a group called Nifty. I go in to talk about entrepreneurship, and I march in with a great big E for the entrepreneur, and then the bottom part I take off, because when I get done talking, it's about failure. Failure you have to embrace, because it's going to push you on roads again that you didn't know that were there for you.
I think that's great advice, and I love the quote, you know, that life's like a football game. You can either, and you're going to die, so you can either die in the bleachers or you can die on the field. So you pick which one would you prefer.
Well, you know, I carry around a bag of M&Ms with me, give or take. I have 75 in there, you know, give or take a few. That's about maybe the average lifespan. So do I want to be leaving the planet not doing anything? And I've used up most of my M&Ms. So, you know, I only have a few left, so I'm really busy now. But I encourage people to get busy in your lives.
Get busy. Well, thank you so much, Nancy, for coming and chatting with us. And we wish you great success. I understand you're going on a tour to India to talk about entrepreneurship, leadership, inspiration, and then also some of the ways that you're creating a socially responsible organization.
Yes, well, my, you know, Rise Above Social Issues Foundation that puts out comic books on relevant issues. And you talked about that great bracelet that you thought people would like, that, you know, like Lance Armstrong, you know, that kind of rubber bracelet, but it says never let anyone define who they want you to be. You know who you are. So, you know, I'm promoting all of that.
Thank you so much, Nancy, and hopefully we can have you on again. That's it for this episode of Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, wishing you luck chasing your dreams.